Afternoon, evening, good night to everybody. It's two up top, Gav Mack, Stephen Cotton and Ed Hall. How are you, gents? Arsenal did win today. Making things interesting for the top four. Before we start, of course, the message that we, it's not just us, it's that everyone should be doing. There's no room for racism in sport, in life, in society. If you see it, report it, get it kicked out. In regards to the standard procedures, you can subscribe to us on all social media platforms and follow us. YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Twitch, something else,
Twitter, YouTube,
OnlyFans.
Yeah. At Top 4 on all social media, and if you put Top 4 into Google, our name comes up first. Oh yeah. Right then. It's like the Kool-Aid Man from. Right. Let's get into stuff. Let's find out first what happened at Stamford Bridge. It just happened a few moments ago. It's Chelsea 0, Manchester United 0. A game of plenty excitement, but yes, controversy. Let's talk about the game first of all, and then we'll come to the moment. And then we'll go into a little bit more. So I'll come to you first, Ed. In fact, I'll talk to you about this bit, Ed, because Cotton has a lot to say on this. So I want to come to you first, Ed, and think about the game, how it played out. 0-0, fair result.
I think a fair result based on the football that was played. Perhaps not a fair result had some decisions been given correctly. I think the mood was set. I think if Manchester United won today, beating Chelsea, who are gunning for top four, I think they would have guaranteed, if they're pretty much already there, but I think they would have guaranteed Champions League football for next season. I think it was that kind of game. I think a draw's not that bad of a result in hindsight, as the title's perhaps already gone in most people's eyes. But it's not about the football today, it's about the decisions, and I'm sure Cotton has a lot to say on that.
Yeah.
before we go into that as well, there was at half time, Callum Hudson-Odoi was substituted again in replace for Reece James. Now, personally, I thought Hudson-Odoi had a half decent first half. I know he's involved in a certain situation. Once again, we're going to come to that in a moment. But do you think he's being put out in the spotlight at the moment? Or, did you think he had that bad of a first half?
I don't think he had that bad of a first half. I think Tuchel's just trying to show who's boss.
Is he injured?
He sat there with ice on his knee and strapping around his leg.
I must have missed that. It's an absolute fair decision. But yeah, right, that would have been hard. That would have been hard on it. He shouldn't have been injured, as far as I'm concerned.
No, he's not allowed to be injured. He should have played all 90 minutes. Right, Stephen.
Yeah, basically, I just want a little two-minute cry. Me and you started this, 2.5 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whatever it was.
Two and a half years ago.
The only reason we started doing this is because we both loved football. We both loved talking about football. We didn't care if 10 people were listening, one person was listening, or whatever. Whatever the reach was, then whether we were going to do it as a podcast, this, that, the other. It was just that we loved football and wanted to talk about it.
Agreed.
I think my love is gone. I think my fire's burnt out with football at the minute. And it's not... This isn't me just saying this because we got a point against Chelsea. Just everything this weekend again. Technology and decisions in other games. At the minute, honestly, the new rules don't make sense and they're awful. The officiating doesn't make sense and it's awful. The football at the minute that most teams are playing is pretty bog standard. And I don't know whether that's no fans or whatever, but that's not really good. City have won the league, so that's done and dusted. Just everything at the minute just seems very just going through the motions. It doesn't seem like it's almost real. Not that these seasons should have an asterisk next to it, as in they won the league, but whatever. But
last year should.
It does just feel like we're just playing this out until we can get back to normal, sort of thing. But honestly, at the minute, I'm just so just drained. Honestly, if we weren't doing this show, you know full well that I will watch as many games of football a day. I'll watch all four Premier League games. I'll try and squeeze in a Bundesliga game, a Serie A game, at the minute, if we genuinely weren't doing the show and I had to watch highlights and games and stuff so we can talk about it, I would be watching United games and that's it. I wouldn't even be bothering at the minute because I'm just so burnt out with it and just so. I mean, that's my actual moan out of the way. But like, going into this, the United one, like this handball situation.
Okay, let's ask that question.
What the f*** was that?
You know what, right? I've put this in here just to clear it up with people. If people might not have seen it or people might have a different view on it, this should clear it up, right? That's a hand. That is a ball. That right there is a handball.
No, it's ball hand, because the ball was above the hand, so therefore...
I know, even I've said you can't take screenshots and you can't take clips out of context or whatever. Watch the whole play. His hand is in an unnatural position. He's punched the ball away from Greenwood getting to it. Honestly, when I say, and I've said this for years, so big up Lewis Dunk for saying it yesterday, but for years, Gav, haven't I been saying to you, refs need to come out and explain decisions. Now, I want to know why he's been told to look at it for VAR because he's missed it, because it's handball. What has he seen there that we haven't seen at home for him to say, nah, it's not a penalty? Well, actually, saying that, after the game...
Luke Shaw had an interview with Sky after the game.
So Harry Maguire has said that the ref has basically said to Harry, he's bottled it. He said, if I give it, there'll be talk about it. Like, there'll be trouble if I give this penalty. I don't care.
The quote was, it will cause too much controversy if I give this penalty.
It's handball.
We've been told that he was told that VAR said it was a penalty.
Yep.
And Stuart Atwell has also said it was a penalty.
Yep.
But he has decided not to give it because it will cause controversy. What the hell does that have to do with the laws of the game? A referee is out there to administer the laws of association football. I bang on about it all the time because if you don't know, I used to be a referee once upon a time. And what the job of a referee is to make sure that the laws of association football are adhered to. That is it. There were 17 laws. Adhere to them.
Yeah.
I'm not a Man United fan, as you full well know, and I'm sat here in my Gooner shirt for the listeners. I am disgusted that decision wasn't given. I was happy because I actually put money on Chelsea, so I'm annoyed that it didn't come in. But I am disgusted that penalty was not given. So as a Man United fan, Cotton, I can't even dream to think.
Do you know what? Yeah, it's not even because of the result. I couldn't even care that it happened in this game or whatever. It's just every other week now, man. Not even every week. There's been two absolutely scandalous, farcical decisions in the space of 2 days. It's not like we're getting a bad VAR decision once every blue moon. It's every week. It's literally every week. And like we've said, why referees aren't made to come out and explain themselves? Because now, look, he's just done it there. He's hid behind, saying to Maguire, sorry, mate, I couldn't give it because Graham Souness might have a moan about me. Like, what? Honestly, like I've said before, and I don't want it to go down a route where it is NFL-ish, but I moaned about it last week and the week before and the week before. Not just the inconsistencies in laws and stuff, but it's so annoying that 1 week a referee has deemed the exact same challenge a foul and a yellow. The next week, a different referee with a different personality doesn't give it because he wants the game to flow or doesn't think there's anything wrong with it.
That is the joy of NFL, because NFL has, you know, there's lots of referees with different personalities, but they're all there to administer the rules of gridiron. That's what they're meant to do. That is your job. It's your one sole job in that sport. You know, it's not like you're a hybrid where you can be like, oh, you know, I might give her this, I might do a bit of this, I might do that. No, you're a referee. You are there to referee the game. Give what you see.
Exactly. So this is what I mean. I want it to be to the point now, and people say this is boring and this will make the game even more boring. It's either a foul or it isn't. If someone gives a yellow card 1 week and a foul, then it's the same next week. I don't care what your personality as a ref is. It's a foul or it's not. It can't be that. I was talking to Ed. I was reading the match report, and they literally said that the penalty wasn't given due to what was the phrase in Ed?
He said it's probably the correct to its decision, but it's good for the game.
The match report said that it was inconclusive, And Jimmy Floyd Hasselbank and that in the studio going, well, I think it's a penalty, but it's good for the game that it wasn't given. What does that mean as well? What is, just to the point.
It's how many pundits and how many fans have agreed with the decision. It does show you, we all have different opinions, and it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. The fact of the matter is, we used to think that refs could get away with it because perhaps they didn't get an angle of a decision, or the linesman just called it slightly wrong. We gave them the benefit of the doubt that they can look back at the decisions. Now we've gave them the ability to. We've come to the conclusion refs are not all in one mind. They all have different opinions of how the game should be played. And that has now made VAR void and null. In my opinion, a pro advocate for VAR, because I was under the influence and the impression that the referees were under one guideline and one set of rules, but they're not. And if that's the case, I can't see the game getting any better. I can only see it getting worse.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, like, if this happened 4 seasons ago, it would be lovely to have this debate. It's like, should we give a penalty? Should we not? We have to talk about those three letters. We don't have to talk. It wasn't there. So therefore, we're allowed to have that opinion of something. And if Stuart Atwell had come out and said something similar to those, you'd be annoyed. But it's like, that's fair enough. It's like, you know, I think it might have been a pen, but if you only think it, it's not enough to give a penalty. But if you've got hard evidence there, and you know, well, Ed, you're pro VAR. I am anti VAR. I never have been a fan of VAR ever. Never wanted it to come into the game. But if it's there, you have to use it, and you have to use it properly. Alpha1234 watching via Twitch. Of course, you can follow us on all social media platforms. He said, "I'm done with refs chickening out of giving decisions."
Yep, bottled it, mate. Do you know another thing as well? When he's looking at that monitor, this is where I don't know if it was you or text or my mate Tony who I was texting while I was watching it. I literally said to him, I was like, where's the match control? Hudson-Odoi stood behind Atwell looking at the monitor as well as Atwell in Atwell's ear, talking to him and shouting at him like, look, why is Atwell not sorting that out? Why is
Give me the other card.
Yeah, exactly.
What are you doing?
It's so stupid. And again, it's not, I don't even care that this happened in the United game. The actual result of the game, 0-0, we weren't good enough again. No creativity. Bruno was having a bad day. Rashford stunk again. Martial was awful again. James, I love Daniel James. He tries hard, bless him, but he's not the quality. So there's no wonder we're not scoring at the minute, where Martial and Rashford can't score. Dan James, I know he's hit a bit of a purple patch with goals, but he doesn't, like, you wouldn't trust him with a one-on-one sort of thing. And if Bruno doesn't tick, then there's no creativity. McTominay, the best players in that game today were McTominay, Fred, Kante and Kovacic. The midfield
I don't know what they gave him on telly, but for me personally, I think Kante should have been man of the match today.
Yeah, they were everyone in that midfield role was good. But so I'm not just crying because we drew, but I'm just literally so done with it.
Yeah, it wasn't just Hudson-Odoi there. It was also Maguire who was there.
Yeah, 100%. He should be booked as well.
Anyone is hanging around. I think Maguire has more of a license to be there, as does Piliquetta, because they're both captains.
But even then,
that gives them more of a license to be there, but it doesn't mean that they should be there.
No, but that's what I mean. The game control, like the fact that Atwell's not even taking charge and saying, "Come on, lads, off you go." Like you know, you shouldn't be doing this. He just didn't care, man. Like it was just. Oh, no, man. Like,
well, we might as well talk about another game with high controversy, and then we'll talk about some football afterwards. So let's talk about this game. It's West Brom 1, Brighton 0. Carl Bartley with the goal after 11 minutes. There were two missed penalties in this game as well. Pascal Gross on 19 minutes and Danny Welbeck on 75, both for Brighton. For me, there's one situation where people don't understand the laws of the game, and it was the second penalty that was missed. And Danny Welbeck touched the ball again after taking the penalty, and the indirect free kick was given. Now, I'm in loads of WhatsApp groups, but this one in particular, they were.
Mr. Popular. Ed, just because he's got friends and it's just me and you, like, Ed's the only person in my contacts.
It's because I've got friends and Chris hasn't. No offense, Chris. Love you, Chris. 4M1T, follow them. But they were, like, the commentators said. I don't know why that was given. I think it might be for offside. It's like, how can you be offside in that situation? You can't be offside from there. So the fact that the commentators don't understand the laws of the game, that you can't double touch a direct free kick, because that's all it is. It's a direct free kick from 12 yards out. And because there was no other touch on the ball, it directly hit the post and came straight back out to Welbeck. It's an indirect free kick. That's a given. Anyway, let's talk about what happened in, I believe, the 29th minute with a free kick. Brighton awarded a free kick and Lewis Dunk takes it quickly. The ball hits the back of the net. And there is controversy straight away because Lee Mason, I'll call him out, I don't care. Lee Mason has blown the whistle to allow a quick free kick. And then before the ball hits the back of the net, he has blown his whistle again to say that you can't take it quickly. Actually, you got to wait for my whistle. Why is he blown? In fact, the moment the whistle goes, I think the ball might have been crossing the line.
Yeah, it was. It was midair or going over the line, yeah.
It was just about to go over the line, wasn't it?
Yeah. Do you know why? He shat his pants. Lewis Dunk, you can see it. He literally stands next to the ref and goes, can I take it? And he nods and blows his whistle. Then, in that split second, Lee Mason's kind of realised that West Brom haven't got their wall set up. Tough, it's a quick free kick.
There's nothing in the laws of the game or competition rules in the Premier League that says that a wall must be set up before you take a free kick, by the way.
But as the ball's in the air, the West Brom players are protesting that they're not ready. So he's filled his pants and gone, oh, quick blow. Because there's no reason for him to blow a whistle. There wasn't a foul. Even the commentators, I don't know why it took him so long. They were like, well, is there an offside or is there a shove? It's like, no, he's just blown it again.
3 minutes, 48 seconds.
The players have every right to ask for it to be stopped because the players will call for anything to give them some form of advantage.
Of course.
You'd expect that in everything. You see even players even shout just before someone takes a shot, you know, just to put them off. I don't have a problem with the players complaining, but the fact of the matter is, like, the reason they feel a right to complain is because referees do this quite often. They choose when they want to follow the law and they choose that when they want to be a good sport. And I'm all for being a good sport. I don't want cheats in the game. But that's not a situation where you're doing the sport a favour by letting someone get ready. The fact of the matter is they've capitalised. Look at Liverpool, Champions League semi-final, second leg against Barcelona, when Trent takes that quick corner. Imagine if the referee went, whoa, let Barca be ready. Come on.
Arsenal did it as well. Thierry Henry had that free kick, which was taken quickly. I think it was against Villa.
Exactly.
It's not like they've taken a quick free kick and then the ref's gone, whoa, I wasn't ready. He's blown the whistle to let them take the free kick, then blown. And it didn't even stop there with how farcical it was. Then he kind of stood there for what literally seemed like an eternity and went, goal. So then the West Brom players were like, what? What's going on? So then he went, no goal. And then it was, go over and look at the monitor. Look at what?
What are you looking at the monitor for?
What was said was that the reason that they wanted him to go look at the VAR is to hear when the second whistle was blown. Is there speakers on that thing? Because he didn't put any headphones in. Like, how, what, like, so then that was another minute, and then they disallowed it again, and the whole thing was just literally...
They didn't disallow it, though. They allowed a retake.
Oh, my God.
So, like, how has he come to that decision? Players already restarted. You blew the whistle to restart. So therefore, if you are looking for a restart, it has to be a drop ball.
Mate, I just...
Why is he given another free kick? He's technically given another direct free kick.
He's been
so incorrect in law, it disgusts me. And now he's meant to be fourth official in the game that's currently happening whilst we're live at the moment, Liverpool versus Sheffield United. He was meant to be fourth official, but he's caught off injured. But to be fair,
he's injured.
No, to be fair, I put it on Twitter yesterday. That run that he was doing, it looked like
he pulled himself.
Yeah, he did. And he realised that the toilets were like, you know, 100 metres away. It's like if he was going in spoons or something.
The thing is, Brighton can't complain that this cost him the game. They missed two penalties. But It's just another, like, we're not even talking about the fact that West Brom are like on a little resurgence and they've won a game at home here. We're sat here talking about inept officiating and people that, like, I wouldn't trust Lee Mason to run my doors. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't trust him to ID people properly on the way in. Like, and we say this all the time. What's the punishment? Okay, he's been. Well, he's not even been stood down. The FA have bottled it as well and gone, he's injured. There'll be nothing from this. He'll be back officiating or back doing fourth officiating midweek. Promise you, nothing.
Or in the VAR room, he will have a game.
That's what I mean. He'll be 100%. Fourth officiating.
We'll find out. We'll find out tomorrow because the fixtures go out tomorrow at about 4 o'clock. But yeah, Brighton. If Brighton try and come back and say if they go down and it's like, yeah, because we should have got a point from this game. Okay, let's have a conversation. Brighton played Palace the other day during the week. They had 75% possession. They had 25 shots on goal. They lost 1-0. The week before, they played against Aston Villa. They this time they had 26 shots on goal in total. So shots on and off target. And they drew that 0-0. So that's 51 attempts they had in two games and didn't score a single goal. And they missed two penalties in this. They need to have a conversation with themselves. And I really would like to have this this chat about Brighton before we have a look at West Brom, because Brighton. We've said it on the show a few times already this season. We're on week 26, game day 26. And we've said it a lot of times. Brighton have been unlucky here. They've been unfortunate here. They play some really good football. Rah, rah, rah. They need a striker and they need one now.
Should have gone for Ryan Brewster before he signed up for the death trap, which is Sheffield United. Or perhaps gone for a more experienced clinical finisher. You know, maybe a Premier League vet. Top of my head, oh God, who would you have gone for had you been Brighton's hierarchy?
Well, just going back on your Ryan Brewster's suggestion, I don't think that's a bad one at all, because the amount of chances that Brighton create, he will get on the end of one of them at least. It's not like they're a team that are constantly under the cosh and not getting enough opportunities. They're very quick. They've got really astute midfielders. They have those inverted fullback, like centre halves that turn into fullbacks that like creep forward and things like that. They know how to attack. So, you know, when you are getting 20 plus attempts on goal in a game, you know, someone like Ryan Brewster could be the right answer for it. Why didn't they have a word with Ollie G at the beginning of the season? Because when Timo Werner was coming in, I don't think he thought that he was going to be getting a lot of game time. Take a loan deal there. Eddie Nketiah from Arsenal. You know?
Yeah, there were opportunities for them to get someone. Like, Mopai isn't... he's not going to get you 20 a season, is he? We do need to talk about Brighton, though, because we and a lot of pundits and ex-players and stuff have been talking about how good their football is and how good they are in the Brian Potter. Brian Potter? That's Phoenix Graham Knights, Potter. That is. Graham Potter. Brian Potter. That's Phoenix Knights.
All right.
We've spoken about how good they are and how pleasant they are to watch and stuff, and they're 3 points off the relegation zone.
This is what I'm talking about.
They're in some serious trouble, man.
They can't.
Them and Newcastle need to be, because Fulham
West Brom are on 17 points. I'm not sure how the Fulham game ended. I completely forgot that game was on.
Fulham drew 0-0.
That was 0-0. They passed the Palace.
But the fact is, I feel that every week Fulham get a point at least.
Yeah, they're only 3 points beyond Newcastle.
They're 8 points from the possible 12 games.
We have a relegation battle. West Brom winning puts them back in it. I still back them to go down.
Yeah,
but
too, yeah.
Really, it's between them four teams, you would say. I don't think you could maybe throw anyone else in there. I would say it's between Newcastle, Brighton, Fulham, and West Brom. That's got to be the four candidates now.
Yeah, I think so too. Right, let's. I'll tell you what. Well, we'll cover that game quickly because there wasn't really much to it. Palace 0, Fulham 0, as said. It was all Fulham. Palace didn't have a shot on goal in the whole game. They got away with one. Cotton, you got anything to add on that?
Only thing I'd add is Palace without Zaha. Well, if Zaha doesn't turn up and perform, basically, whether he's injured or not, sort of thing, you know what I mean? they're just nothing. They're not going to go. They're not in trouble of going down or anything like that. But I would heavily wager and suggest that this might be Roy's last season at Palace. Maybe last season in football. I don't know if it's all just a bit too far gone for him. Do you know what I mean? Like it's
got an opportunity to address next season, because if you keep Roy there and you know the blunders of this year go down, you know, don't expect to not see them in a relegation battle next year. But you've got an opportunity with the safety net you've got, and perhaps the arsenal of players you've got in terms of your Zaha and Eze. You can go to Roy. We spoke about this last week. Roy, we're going to make you step down at the end of the year, but on your own terms, because you've done a fair bit for this club and you've had a long managerial regime, and then in the background find your replacement. Most clubs don't get the benefit of being able to do that.
Yeah, they're actually in a key position right now to use that to their advantage, you know, and you don't have to put it in the press like how Borussia Mönchengladbach and Dortmund did their business midway through the season, just before a key Champions League game. Oh yeah, by the way, Marco Rose has come to join us. See you later, pal. It's not like that. You don't have to do it that way. I think you bang on the money there, Ed.
Yeah.
They need to be proactive. Like, there's no point in keeping Roy and then halfway through next season, like Ed said, you find yourself in a relegation scrap again and nothing's changed and the football still is stale and awful.
That sounds the same ball shot from Fabinho. I just want to throw that one out there.
Is that the one that Ramsdale tips on the bar, the cross?
No, that one I've just seen.
Oh, okay. But yeah, Palace, yeah, Roy, bless him. He's been around forever, so I can't... I imagine he'll step down.
Do you think Fulham will stay up?
I think they will, yeah.
Mm. Crazy. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams who have really made me look a mug. Fulham, no, they've probably been in the relegation battles. I wouldn't say I look a mug there. I remember at the start of the season saying West Ham were going to be going down with sheer and utter confidence, and they could be playing in the Champions League next season.
Erhan, thanks for watching. Erhan's watching via YouTube. So, of course, if you're watching on another platform, feel free to watch us via YouTube. It'd be so beneficial to us. We really appreciate it. And, of course, you can follow us on all social media platforms, at To The Top Football. But Erhan says, like, the minute Zaha leaves, Palace are gone. Dude, it's happening already. Palace have only got one win in their last 20 games in which Zaha has not featured. That is bad. You can't be that reliant on one player. No way. One team that are going to be without a couple of players now, and Newcastle. They drew yesterday. They drew one apiece at home with Wolves. Jamal Lascelles just before the hour mark, and then Ruben Neves with about 15 minutes to go. Newcastle, they are going to be without Almiron and Alan Saint-Maximin for potentially a while. How much will this affect them, and what implications does this have on their battle to stay in the Premier League, Stephen?
It's major. That is catastrophic at the minute, because Saint-Maximin is always their brightest player. He's always the one that looks like he's going to create or do anything. Joelinton obviously isn't hitting the mark. Callum Wilson's still injured, is he?
Mm.
Yep, so Wilson's out. Newcastle are in some real trouble. Fulham's form, I can't see Fulham now dipping off, or I can definitely see Fulham closing the gap on Newcastle some way, whether it's a few draws here or there, or Newcastle losing a weekend that Fulham win. But Newcastle are in some serious trouble, and now they're losing two of their most influential players. Mm. You can only see it going one way, and I feel bad and I feel sorry for Bruce, but do you know what, even when we were defending Newcastle's style of football as boring or whatever, they were still picking up points, and it was kind of like justified. Now they're playing poorly and they're losing and they've been sucked into a relegation fight. You can't really defend it, can you?
No, it's getting indefensible, and it's a shame, because I feel like Bruce would get the blame for it, but I honestly can't see the difference of the style of play between Bruce and Rafa.
It's not about that, though, is it? I mean,
it is to Newcastle fans.
Yeah, but to Newcastle fans, that's never going to change until you change management up the stairs. There's only so much you can do with that band of players. You could get Pep Guardiola in, you can get Jurgen Klopp in. Sure, you might inspire him for 6 to 8 weeks, if that, you're still going to end up with the same bland football in the long run. You know, I could barely criticise Steve Bruce for not adding to what Rafa did, and perhaps in comparison to defending him for doing exactly the same thing. But at the end of the day, that's not the problem. The problem is the inability to sell the club to the right person. Perhaps the Premier League has a right to answer for that. Perhaps as Mike Ashley does for not truly showing what he wants to do with it. But I think if Newcastle stay up this year, it's going to be the same situation next year.
Yeah, I think with the Newcastle takeover and thing as well, I think there's been a few people that have been interested, but Mike Ashley wants too much, or he still wants to have some sort of involvement. I mean, hell, the people they were trying to get to buy the club, your man's just been found guilty of authorising the hit on that journalist in like Saudi Arabia or a few like last year or whatever. So, I mean, I think the Premier League were right to step in there with their fit and proper person, Zach, to not let that takeover happen. But you're right, and until that changed at the club, and to be honest, will Mike Ashley care about going down parachute payments and stuff like that? I don't know if it would really affect him. To be honest, I don't think he cares.
I think the issue is it's not the fact of the parachute payments and have money coming in. The issue with Newcastle is, can he get the money that he wants to buy them, wants to sell the club for,
if they go down to the Championship?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it's like, we need to stay in the Premier League. We need to sell now, because if we don't, we're going to be looking at half the money, if that.
What happened to Wolves, man? What really? I know.
We'll talk about, yeah, we'll come on to Wolves. There's just this little quick one here. Benitez is far better at coaching players, patterns than Bruce. Simon Rondon and Iso Premier's connection example. That is brilliant. That is a brilliant example. I do get that. But in terms of where they are in the lead, the number of points that they're picking up and things like that, they might be getting a bit of a relationship there, but they also get a relationship between Almiron and Wilson when both players are fit and they're playing. So I don't see that much of a difference. I really don't. But yeah, Cotton Wolves.
Yeah, I mean, we said, and I was shut down at the start of the season when I said I thought Wolves are going to really suffer this year, even though I had a gun. Even though they didn't have Europa League, and I said I think they'd struggle, and I don't know why I thought that. I just thought that it wouldn't be the same as last year, and they really have struggled, man. They've had like some really poor run of results, some really poor form, and it can't just be down to missing Jimenez. Like, it's not the amount of Wolves games I've watched since he's been injured, and they haven't created anything for a striker. He could have literally been posted up there with a deck chair, and they still wouldn't have found him with a cross or someone trying to play a ball in behind.
Sorry, Cotton, I disagree with you, mate. And the reason why is because Adama Traore had 14 dribbles in this game. More than anyone else in the top five leagues in Europe.
Right? How many crosses did he put in?
It's irrelevant.
That's another one. Like, and the fact that Traore doesn't start as much anymore kind of proves my point that he is... You bring him on when legs are tired and you want him to terrorise defences. But as far as end product with crosses and assists and passes, it just ain't there. Fabio Silva, I know he's 18, but it's too much for him at the minute. He's
way too much.
He can't lead the line of a Premier League team. Neto and who's your other man?
Podence.
Neto and Podence, when they play, they have shown bright spots. But you can't just pin it all on them. Do you know what I mean? You can't literally have to just hope that you give the ball to Neto and let him run around 11 people and score. Like, it's just not doable.
You know, it's also easy to forget that they've technically lost Jota and Jimenez because of that injury. Without a doubt, they're two best players. And if I can't remember exactly when Liverpool signed Jota, but I'm pretty sure it came out of nowhere. There wasn't a strong link to Liverpool. I think it was more Timo Werner. So perhaps Wolves wasn't aware they were going to lose Jota, and that is probably why they didn't line up a replacement. So I think judge Wolves on how they bounce back next year. They've been good enough to stay away from any form of a relegation battle.
Do you think that Nuno Espirito Santo is the right person for the job?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of talk from, like, Wolves fans are very much in that 50-50 zone.
Well, you know, you get relegated back to the Championship and you'll be missing Nuno. You know, I mean, exactly. It's, you know, don't forget what he's been up against and where you've come from. Let's be honest, you wouldn't be anywhere near the Premier League had you not been bought out. So, you know, before you get a little bit too arrogant about the situation, Wolves fans, be very grateful for what Nuno has done. And that's what I've done.
There was another thing just before this game. And again, I feel sorry for Steve Bruce. There's the journalist that they were like interviewing over Zoom or whatever in the press conference. And he's literally just trying to wind up Bruce he was literally like, well, there's some fans out there that are saying that this, that and the other. And Steve Bruce turned around to the geese and went, some fans or you? Some fans or you? Have you gone out and spoke to the fans or is it your opinion on this? And the guy kind of got all sheepish. And honestly, the football media that's another thing I hate at the minute. It's just everyone's trying to create a divide between a fan base and a club or this, that and the other when it's not even really the case. Like, just because that journalist got to put his voice across to Steve Bruce and say, well, apparently, he could have said anything. He could say, well, apparently the fans aren't happy with the fact that you use Physio Sport talcum powder. Like,
Physio Sports was banned, by the way, back in the day, let's be real. But like, do you reckon it's because, like, going back to what you said at the beginning of the show, Cotton, is it because that the football has been so dross that the media are just looking for things? Do you reckon that could be the case?
Probably. Well, they've got to find a way to sell. Well, it's not even about selling papers anymore, is it? Because of the internet and Twitter and stuff, you can get your news and everything so quick. You don't need to read an article on a newspaper website. So it's not even a case that they need one big story to get loads of clicks. They're at the point now where they need 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 scandals a day to get the clicks coming through because it's just it's not the way that the media work. Like, no one buys print media anymore. But it's just, I just can't be bothered with all of them.
I feel that. The lunchtime game was at the King Power. Arsenal winning away from home against Leicester. I don't get it. You should have seen me after 10 minutes. I was not happy.
It looked like the same old, didn't it?
Same old. Classic Arsenal playing on their heels. Leicester 1, Arsenal 3. Goals from Tielemans in the first couple of moments. Then David Luiz for half time. Lacazette with the penalty. Nicola Pepe as well. But the stories are with the Ballon d'Or elect Willian with his two assists. Let's be real, he had a brilliant game today.
Mate, listen, because I looked really silly when you signed him. Because when you signed him, I was like, what a signing. Willian on a free, it's a no-brainer. So when he does put in shifts, like, that is the quality that he can bring. Unfortunately, he doesn't bring it that often.
Why has it taken 27 games to see it?
I don't know. Does he care anymore? He's getting on a bit, hasn't he? I mean, is his heart... Did he want to sign for Arsenal, or was just that the best offer on the table at the time?
Probably didn't want to... You know, you have the opportunity to stay in London and still play Premier League football for a club.
Exactly.
You know, the same stature, same level at the time. I would have took that if I was Willian. Yeah. But, you know, back to Arsenal. Arsenal just beat Leicester. This is an incredible result.
With the first goal, when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be one of those days. Where Tielemans picks the ball up and he's on the M5 and he's allowed to literally dribble the ball all the way. Forrest Gump, he comes through the tunnel, onto the pitch, runs the whole length of the pitch and, well, he wasn't even running, he was sauntering. And the Arsenal defence just backed off and backed off and backed off. And it was kind of a case of, well, are you going over to him? Are you not going over to him? And he just taps it into, well, not an empty net, it was still a good finish, but it was a very, very easy, goal.
Yeah, you see that sort of stuff on like Sunday League football. I'm really, really disappointed in the way that Arsenal gave that goal away.
When I saw that goal, I thought, oh my Lord, this is going to be a long afternoon for Arsenal.
Yeah, but... and like the way the sun was out, and it paid, honestly, because I felt that Arsenal, to be honest, before the first goal, I did feel that Arsenal were just going to go on one of those games where they dominate possession, you know, but not create anything special. And there was the shout for the penalty, which correctly wasn't given by VAR. So, hey, credit where credit's due. because the foul actually happened on the outside of the box.
Yeah.
Corner as well. It was so funny watching Leicester defend a corner the way Arsenal defend a corner with the zonal marking. They were not doing it, you mean? Pretty much, yeah. It was just a line of blue shirts, and David Luiz thought, I'm just gonna peel off your man here. And no one followed him. It was so obvious he was there. It's David Luiz. How can you miss him? Yeah. His hair. He's wearing a white shirt, for the love of Jesus. You guys are wearing blue. And he just literally peeled off and got his head on target, thankfully, because he didn't actually make a great connection with it. But he headed it away from Schmeichel, and it found the back of the net. And I felt that Arsenal truly deserved to be going into the break on even terms. I didn't honestly think that they deserved to be going in the lead, but they were. What indeed his arms were doing in the air at that point?
No. But what you were just saying there, just quickly about he was wearing white. There's actually been quite a bit of a moan about Arsenal wearing white in that game, which is another thing that added to my list of modern football. They literally wore that white shirt because they've got to get their quota up to have a reason to have three shirts. There's no clash between dark red and blue.
There was not going to be any clash on the shorts either, because sometimes you do find that it's like there's been a few times when Arsenal have been at home and they've rocked the red shorts as well. And to be honest, it looks so sick. And I wish we did it more often, but we don't. We wear white shorts, but Leicester wore blue shorts today, so there wasn't even going to be a clash on that. So
it's just to fill that quota, man, and it stinks. It's such,
it's a marketing thing.
Yeah, it's horrible, man.
I don't like it. I really don't like it. But I like that shirt, to be honest.
Yeah.
So. And then Lacazette, great penalty. I thought he dispatched that really nicely. And then Nicolò Pepe, he was in the right place at the right time after a really smooth move. The only issues I'll probably say about this game is that Emil Smith Rowe is out and he could be out for a little while. However, Martin Odegaard, he changed the game when he came on. He looked so smooth and slick with his passing, his movement, his awareness. So, you know, what annoys me about Arsenal is that they'll do this and make me believe.
Who you got next week?
Burnley at home. Burnley away. So I fancy that. But the issue is that when Arsenal play like this, I have every right to feel, you know, late push for top four. You never know. But we'll lose 2-0 to Burnley next week. And then it'll be back to.
If you've got that mentality, then the players are going to have that mentality. To be honest with you, you know, you have every right to beat Burnley next week should it happen, because Burnley, seem to have secured their Premier League position again, and you know they look like they're off the ball a bit. You know, no excuses. Arsenal need to win next week. They need to keep the ball rolling, and if they carry on, they can get top four. But, you know, they need to not set themselves up for failure. The fans need to not set themselves up for failure, because you'll never get out of that mentality otherwise.
Oh, of course. And the race for top four is heating up. It is looking interesting because of results that have happened elsewhere. In particular, West Ham. They weren't expected to go to the Etihad and win, let's be real. But this is a team that truly made a good account of themselves, in my opinion, for getting something out of it. They went 1-0 down and they tried to take the game to Man City, but they didn't try and take too many risks, because this is something that West Ham get bagged on quite a bit. When they play against a big club, one of the renowned top six teams, they seem to go in their shell a little bit. Whereas this game, I don't feel that they did. The goals came from Diaz and Stones, despite Aguero coming back from injury it's only his first start of the season, is it? Or second start of the season. The equaliser came from Mikel Antonio just before half time, who's going to be representing the Reggae Boys. Oh,
yep.
Yeah. I'm very happy about that. Him, Leon Bailey doing bits. Hey, don't watch them on there. So, Man City, it's a procession now, isn't it? They're just going to cruise along to the title. Yep. Let's be real. West Ham.
No, if you win 20 games of their own, all competitions, more power to you if you're going to win the league, man. Like that we can't even. Whoever finishes second, it doesn't matter. Like you can moan all you want about, well, we had this player out for an extended period of time, or we should have won that game. It doesn't matter. It's going to be so inconsequential come the end of the season when City have won 30 games in a row and they're 25 points clear. It's just not going to matter, is it?
You can get at City, though. West Ham proved that. I don't know what, like, I generally don't know why managers and teams, like, I understand You'd be an absolute idiot to go toe-to-toe with City, as you would most top six clubs. That's why people defend. But history shows if you get at City, you can score against them. The perfect setup for City is for you to sit back and give them all possession. But everyone does it all the time. They roll over and let City absolutely bum them. You know, you need to show something. And props to West Ham for doing that, because on another day, this could have been a draw even. And you might laugh and say, oh, it's a draw, but that's a point against City. People need to attack City sometimes. And, it just doesn't happen enough.
I know we've moaned about the spending and stuff before, but BT Sport and their Pep wet dream. It was the early kickoff, wasn't it? So I was just first game I'm watching, and literally the loving, they're like, who was it that said, was it Martin Keown? Maybe whoever it was like, Ruben Diaz has been an absolute revelation. A revelation. They brought him for 61 million. Look, they haven't found him from Russian diamonds. Like, they were literally banging on about City's defensive record and how unbelievable it is. And I hate to be like whinging and moaning and like, because it's not just because it's City. If it was any other team, I'd say this. They're literally like Pepper genius. Bruv, all City do is spend 50, 60 million on a defender until it works out. And they just cycle them in and out until they work.
Well, then you just said it there, though, until it works out. Over the years, like when they had their really good defence, it was Otamendi and, you know, Demichelis, you know, and they were still winning titles and stuff with Dross, but they were conceding, they were leaking a lot of goals. John Stones, they spent a lot of money on John Stones. I think that's more English tax than the fact he's
good.
It was
still 50 mil.
The same media was slagging Pep off last year in the second half of the season, saying he's come to an end. Watch Pep move again. He's ran out of ideas. And now they're like, Pep! Oh my God, he's such a genius. 500 trillion on defenders. Oh, it's like, bro, this is why I can't stand football anymore. It's the same people.
It is the same names there. Same Martin Keown, Joe Cole.
It was Joe Cole.
It's going to happen.
Graham Souness. They all say, they'll all sit there and mince their words, but not even turn around and say, do you know what, hands up, I got that one wrong.
They're privileged footballers who have been lucky enough to have been in the game for so long, and now they get the master punditry because they've sat on a bench a couple of times. You know,
I'm going to go with this one, though, because Diaz has had the same effect as Van Dijk. Say I'm wrong.
I am. The defense.
We are all with you because, you know, it was like, right, we're all spending money. That's the way of football now. Whether we like it or not, that is the way things are. You have to spend money in order to speculate to accumulate, basically. That's what it is. But Ruben Diaz, him coming in, how much have we always bang on about how good Laporte is, Laporte's fit.
I was like, all right, Gav.
it's not really for me. I'll tell you who looks like a little bit. I think a lot. If you were to mix him and Rodri in one person, he would look like your man, Adam Levine. From Maroon 5. Like, that is like a love child right there.
Obviously, with the Joe Cole saying crazy things, in this game, Joe Cole literally said, Darren Randolph is as good of a number two that you'll find in this league at any team. I could literally rattle you off four. There's two number twos at Manchester United that are better than Darren Randolph.
There's a number two at Arsenal.
Romero, Kepa, Heaton. Who's your number two at Arsenal in a minute?
Matt Ryan.
Oh, right. Matt Ryan, yeah. Like... I just didn't know what he was talking about, and it was I can't be bothered anymore, because saying City have been unbelievable, do not get me wrong, I even defended them staunchly last week, and their football is incredible, but if you genuinely can every single season spend 200 million on a whole new back line until it works out, there is going to come a point where it works out and you're set. Like, it's going to happen.
They'll never fall off with the money they've got. A worse season for them would be. Like, they've got too much money and too much talent to fall off. They can.
Which really makes me laugh when Liverpool, they just turned up something special last year. And the year before, they pushed the City all the way. And let's be real about the money that Liverpool spent. They've spent money. Everyone goes, what are their net spend? I don't care about what you're selling players for. I care about how much you're buying players in for in order to try and push Man City to the limits.
There is an argument to that, because where do you find the money?
Yeah,
City could spend £250 million and sell no one. City could finish outside the top four and still spend £250 million.
I'm talking about Liverpool did pick up a couple of bargains. You know what I mean? Like players like Robertson, but you did spend £75 million on Van Dijk. He spent £70 million on Alisson.
They finished 7th for 8th. Tell me that.
They spent 70 mil on Van Dijk and 70 million on Adrian at a time where they weren't losing 100
Adrian,
million.
Banter.
Alisson. But those signings were at a time when they weren't losing £100 million a week match revenue. Like normal teams at the minute can't afford to go out. I was critical on Liverpool.
I agree.
But at the same time, we can't afford it. And like you said, right? You just said they brought Van Dijk and whatnot. Like, don't forget, City literally in the space of however long, John Stones for 50 mil, Diaz for 50 mil. Mate, they brought Nathan Ake for like 30 mil or whatever. Like, why? Yeah. What,
Coutinho for 156 million. Do you know what but I mean? That also helped.
And the thing is, City, like we've that was it. You were saying about net spend and people selling. Ed said City don't have to sell. They don't. Mendy barely plays, cost them 50 mil. They went and brought Cancelo for 50 mil. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if they sell Mendy or whether he sits there and sees out his contract for free.
No, I'm not disputing that. It's such a common argument every time, isn't it? It's like, well, you know, other teams do spend. You know, Arsenal spent 72 million on, you know, the second best player, second best winger in the Premier League. Anyway. Well, one of them's up for the Ballon d'Or. I've already said this.
It's offside. Sorry. Kabak just pulled his own net.
Oh, that's a shame. Leeds nil. We'll talk about. I'll say a quick word on that in a couple of moments. Leeds nil. Aston Villa 1. El Ghazi after 5 minutes. This game was pretty damn tosh. I think the silence agrees with that.
No. Sorry, I was looking at that replay. They might VAR this, I think.
We will talk about.
Brilliant, and Ramsdale has just turned into prime Neuer this game.
We will talk about this after because people are listening as well, and they don't know that this game's happening at the time of recording. So, Sheffield United versus Liverpool is actually in 2 weeks' time when you listen to this.
Yeah.
Aston Villa versus Leeds. Leeds, you know. They played some really good football. You know, they felt unlucky. You know, they were just a joy to watch. Blah blah blah.
Breath of fresh air FC.
Should we talk about Spurs?
The people's champions.
Let's talk about Spurs. I wasn't blown away by that game. I know other people might have been blown away that game. You want to hear about your club? Well, if you do want to hear about Leeds or Aston Villa, I'll suggest you listen to your fan channel for that particular moment, because we haven't got anything positive to say about either of those two clubs off the back of that game. I could advise some fan channels. Anyway, right, Spurs 4, Burnley 0. No intro for this one because it was all Spurs and they deserved every single moment of it, which disgusts me saying that as an Arsenal fan, but as a football fan, how great were Tottenham today and how fantastic was Gareth Bale?
They were good, but the stall was set out very early with that first goal where Burnley just didn't turn up to the races, man. And the minute they went 1-0 down after 2 minutes, you did think this is going to be an absolute mugging.
I thought it was going to be 1-0 Spurs. I thought it was going to sit back. I honestly thought when they scored that early, that's it. But they looked brilliant.
Yeah, every time they went forward, they looked class. But again, with the inconsistencies, Tottenham beat Burnley 4-0. Who have Tottenham got next week? Because I bet they won't carry this form. Like, they won't go into that game and push on from this. They'll probably drop a point or two or whatever.
Be classic Spurs, really, wouldn't it?
They were really good, though.
There was a bit of chat about the Nick Pope and his performance today. Apart from the first goal, do you think he was at fault for anything today?
Not really. The first goal is only his problem because he's too far off his line to not come for the ball. He has to either stay on his line and wait for the shot or try and get the ball. You can't just be no man's land and do nothing. Mm. All good keepers have a bad day, man, or an iffy day. So you can't really, like, Oh my God!
Well, the next six fixtures for Tottenham. They've got Fulham away during the week. Oof. They have got Palace at home. Then they've got Arsenal away on the 14th of March. Then they've got Villa away. Newcastle at the Newcastle away again, and then Tottenham. Tottenham. We're talking about Tottenham. Then Man United at home. So that's their next six.
That's a mixed bag of fixtures. There's some tough ones in there, and there's some ones they should win.
And then off the back of that, they've got Everton as well. They've got Everton after that, and then the League Cup final. So, you know, there's never an easy week or an easy time to play any game, let's be real. But sometimes you want to be playing, you know, five or six of the bottom seven in a row at a time where there's no relegation battle. You know, just try and get some momentum, you know, between, say, like, November and December and November and Jan. You want to play against those sort of teams where... I do feel that Arsenal have had to play against a really good team this week, then a bad one, then a good one, then a bad one, then a good one, then a bad one. And it's just, but then those bad teams that are, you know, notably bad teams, have had really good seasons, and it's like, oh, this is really, really annoying. You know, when we're trying to find a little bit of momentum, this is a time that Spurs could go on and win their next two, because we know we're saying about Fulham, the Fulham situation, but. I can't see Fulham getting anything out of the game, but I can't see them getting pumped either. So I think Fulham will make a good account of themselves, but I do honestly believe that Tottenham will win that game. Burnley, you could argue that they've been sort of dragged into a relegation battle now.
No.
Yeah. Do you not think?
No, not at all. Not at all. It's between four teams. It's not
if
Burnley.
If they play this like this every week, though, I mean, they're only 5 points off Fulham. So if Fulham win a few games and Burnley lose a few games,
here's what will happen. Burnley will win their next two games.
Yeah,
I'm telling you, Burnley have that mentality which is strong enough to give me so much confidence. They won't get relegated. I'll put my arms on it. No, I won't.
Can you timestamp the thank you? Cheers.
The thing is, I understand what Ed's saying though. Like, they wouldn't be my favourite to go down.
No, not for me either.
But they need to buck their ideas up and not get lazy, because they could very easily turn into a relegation fight for within the next 2 weeks if they're not careful. So,
yeah. In regards to Tottenham. Is this enough to put them on that top four? I know we just went through a couple of their fixtures that they got next, but is this enough to help them push towards a top four finish?
If they can keep putting runs together and keep playing like this, then there's no reason not to.
Do you think they'll get top four, Ed?
No, because definitely. I still think that football's far too negative. We're still on about Burnley, right? No, honest. I'll be honest with you. This seems like another season where no one wants to finish anywhere else but first. Do you know what I mean? It's like in the seasons gone by, it was like no one wants fourth place, and I feel like this is going to be another year of that. So many teams could have ran away and solidified at the top four position this year, but no one wants it. You know, ask me again towards the last five games of the season, and I'll give you a definitive answer. But I think it's impossible to conclude. Right now,
fair dues. Let's have a look at the bottom of the table. Bottom of the table looks like this. Sheffield United, and they are in play at the moment. And the score is 0-0 still.
0-0.
So as it stands, they would actually be on 12 points. Ooh, check out Sheffield United. Absolute great escape lies. West Brom there in 19th on 17 points. So with that win over Brighton, has that helped there? Quest to stay in the Premier League, who knows. Fulham, they're in 18th, they're on 23 points, and then you've got Newcastle and Brighton both on 26 points, just outside the relegation zone. Burnley on 28, Southampton, what a fall from grace, already top of the league in November. Obviously that's when the season finished. They're on 30 points in 14th place. Palace, they're getting dragged down, they're on 33 points. Wolves on 34 in 12th, and Leeds on 35 points. And then if we look at the top half, there's Arsenal knocking around there, you know, trying to go for a late one themselves, 37 points there on. Aston Villa They have two games in hand over Arsenal and a number of teams in the top half on 39 points, level with Tottenham. In seventh place is Everton, who play tomorrow, level with Liverpool, although Liverpool technically be on 41 points at the moment because they are currently drawing 0-0 with
Sheffield. How this game is 0-0 is beyond me.
Yeah, honestly.
Even when Liverpool play well, they can't score. It's driving me nuts.
You know my opinion on Ramsdale. He has literally turned into prime Oliver Kahn for some reason today.
That is him.
And they've been very good shots on target. They haven't just been from pot shots or anything. They've been one-on-ones and crazy stuff, yeah.
Ramsdale, inspired performance from Aaron Ramsdale, future England number one. Chelsea are in fifth place after their draw with Man United on 44 points. West Ham still in the top four on 46 points from their 26 games. Leicester, after their defeat against Arsenal, remain in third place on 49 points. Man United closing the gap on Manchester City, 12 points between those two sides. A few fixes during the week. These are catch-up games for a lot of clubs. So on Tuesday, you've got Man City at home against Wolves. Now, Wolves do like playing against Man City, so you never know what's going to happen there. Man City to win 3-0. Wednesday night, Wednesday night you've got Burnley versus Leicester, Sheffield United versus Aston Villa. Oh, it's that game again. It's that game, the controversy game, Vargate. And then you've got Palace versus Manchester United. And then on Thursday, you've got Tottenham. They travelled to Craven Cottage, that game that was rearranged after the COVID situation, if you remember. West Brom at home to Everton. So we know Everton, you know, they've got Southampton tomorrow. They will probably win that and lose against West Brom because that is Everton. And that is the whole point of... Because that's what they do. And then Liverpool have got Chelsea. Now, what a game that is on paper. But are we saying already that game is going to be 0-0?
I generally think Liverpool will lose that game. I generally think that we've got a problem at Anfield. And I don't think we'll address it mid-season.
I could see a draw there. I don't know if it's a score draw or a no score draw, but I could see a score there. A draw there, sorry.
Before we go, a few more comments.
Oh, yes, thank you. I just wanted to answer this real quick, so I'm not getting to it again. But what, the same Celtic that lost to Ross County and then their club legend had to resign before he got sacked again? Yeah, that's the ones. But enough on that. Big up the Ross County mafia.
Speaking of Celtic, quick one out there. Would you boys be on doing, depending on the time, because you know as I'm back on night soon. But back on nights. Celtic have the opportunity to concede the title to Rangers at home, providing Rangers...
All they need is a draw, isn't it?
All they need is a draw. It's worth doing a watch-along for that show.
When is that?
That is in 2 weeks' time. In
2 weeks' time, yeah.
Yeah, it's not next week's fixtures, it's the week after. Lawrence, our rugby loving friend, is a season now Cities. It's not always Cities at all, actually. But yeah, they've won 20 games on the spin in all competitions. Can't see anything else.
Yeah, exactly. You can't complain about it, man.
Indeed. Most of the other comments we actually went through as the show was on. So that is it, I believe. That is it. So just double checking. Oh, yeah, that one there as well. Chelsea fans, they love a Nets Ben chat. Maybe some Chelsea fans should meet up with some Liverpool fans and then they can have a talk about Nets Ben.
Do it on Wednesday.
Whenever you like, but we ain't getting involved. No, thanks everybody for tuning in, watching on all our social media platforms on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram. You can follow us on Instagram. And some of the guys have been watching on Twitch as well. Really appreciate your comments and your input. We are back on Sunday next week. We might have a little show going on in the meantime with the review show. You'll be able to catch the Bundesliga review on Wednesday via our channel at 7 p.m. and teamed up with Football Dugout, where we'll be talking about Schalke, who are bottom of the league and have sacked Christian Gross as well after just 2 months of being in charge. It's,
did you hear about what happened? The why he got sacked?
Oh, we oh 100%. Yes. I know why. It's Snakey McSnakes
again. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Leave Arsenal, turn up there, and yeah, we'll be going
do
into
the same
that
thing. Yeah,
deep into that. There's been some crazy results that have happened in the Bundesliga as well, including a madness game at Leipzig as well. So I'll be talking about that. And then myself, Gav Mac, I'm going to be on the Selk Grassroots channel tomorrow at 8 PM and talking about junior refereeing and well, amateur refereeing and semi-pro stuff. So check that out as well. But yeah, I think that's it.
Yep.
Then that's it. So from myself, Gav Mac, Ed Hall and Stephen Cotton, thank you everybody, and gute Nacht.
Mason and Atwell out.
Everyone out.
I agree with that one.